Tonight on The Download, from the Daily Line, 80 Quig. Bloodshot Records recording artist Ruby Boots. And our resident philosopher Al Genie. Now, here's your host, a man who successfully avoided getting hit by falling ice today, Justin Kaufman.
Yeah, that was no joke. I was at a stoplight over here, not too far from here, and I just looked up and I just saw chunks of ice falling down. Remember when falling ice would be the top story of a newscast? When we would get to temperatures like this and ice would fall from buildings, it was a no-brainer that this would be the top. But today is one of those days where news from around the country pushes that to maybe a 10-14 type story. Maybe it replaces the Facebook photos from the weather. Something like that. Hey, everybody, it's The Download here, 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock tonight. Great news today. If you have not heard, you've been hearing it all day. The Chicago White Sox and WGN Radios are now partners. We're going to air the Chicago White Sox games here on 720 WGN, starting on February 23rd, spring training game. That's going to mean a lot of great White Sox baseball here on WGN. It'll affect us in a way because, you know, obviously games play at night, but there are some day games, and not unlike what we do with the Chicago Blackhawks, we'll adjust and be here when they're not. Also, hopefully, they'll let us sit out in the bleachers and broadcast the game, bootleg the game. I don't know if that's possible. You know, something like that. We'll figure it out. But it's going to be great. As you know, I'm a White Sox fan. I feel bad for Pete Zimmerman, you know, Mr. Cub over there, but he had his time to enjoy. Now we get excited about a team that is on the way up, which is a positive thing to say, right? Anyway, it's great to see baseball starting. The question I have is, do I have to pick White Sox now in the first round of my fantasy baseball team? You know, is that the thing? Now that I work at the flagship, does that mean I have to be a homer when it comes to the players? I mean, I am a two-time. I get the snake pick. I got the 12 and the 1 because I won the league, and I'm a two-time champ. So
he won.
Yeah. Oh, no. I don't know if I told you.
No. I don't think you mentioned it.
I don't know if you mentioned it. Yeah. So I do have a first and second round right back-to-back because that's what happens when you're champion.
Yeah. You could pick, 12 and 13.
So I will pick Jose Abreu, and then I'll probably slide into a James Shields.
Nice.
A little early, but you know what? I'm a homer. You know, you got to grab him.
What about a Zisk and a Gamble? Oscar Gamble just recently passed away.
He did.
Rest in peace.
Yeah. You're going to have to get up on your White Sox history.
See, I know.
Referencing players that just recently left us. Lamar Hoyt would be good.
Yeah. I can do it.
Yeah, you got to get the 83 Sox. You got to get the Hoyt, the Dotson, the Kittle, the Fisk.
Yeah, the bowl.
Yeah, you got to get a little, maybe a little earlier than the 83 Sox, a Chet Lemon.
Chet Lemon, center fielder.
Wearing shorts.
Yeah.
A Tommy Pachoric. Maybe there's a lot of great names. We'll get into, trust me, there'll be plenty of 80s baseball names to throw around now that we're the flagship of the White Sox.
Yeah, I can't wait.
Big show coming up tonight. We'll talk with 80 Quig and Ray Hodge from Springfield. We'll break down and get reaction from Governor Rauner's budget speech today, 8 o'clock. Resident philosopher Al Genie's back. We'll talk about democracy and its challenges and how it can be a tool for days like today. Also, 9 o'clock, Bloodshot Records recording artist Ruby Boots, singer-songwriter, roots music, lives in Nashville by way of Australia. She'll be in studio. Which is a great new album. It's getting great reviews, and she's going to perform live on Valentine's Day for us, which is nice. Most of her songs are about breakup, but still, it's close. Kevin Powell will be with us. We'll talk about pitchers catchers reporting for the White Sox. And Molly Green's back because she is watching the Winter Olympics tonight, so we don't have to. Who had the coolest coats? Right? I'm really into the Olympics. I have a whole thing I want to get into where I cannot get my family interested. They and I feel like I've overdone it now. I feel like they're just against me. First, I was like, come on. Now I feel like even if it was something they wanted to watch, they're not going to watch it out of spite because I was so into it. So I'm going to figure out how to rectify that before. I mean, tonight's a big night with the couple skating is tonight, but yeah. News, weather, and traffic tonight with Rob Martier and Esmeralda Leon. Production provided by Pete Zimmerman. I'm Justin Kaufman, and this is The Download, show about Chicago starring those who know it well. All right, we'll take a quick break. We'll come back, and we will do the carryout, so stay with us. All right, it's The Download here, 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Let's carry out. All right, here are today's top stories. Well, the awful news just keeps flowing this week. A shooter attacked a high school in Florida. 17 people were killed, many more injured. This happening in the freshman building at Parkland High School. 3,200 students, Coral Springs, Florida. Just awful to watch the footage of emergency vehicles and SWAT teams ushering kids out of the school, kids with their hands over their heads to prove they didn't have weapons. Just awful. I mean, the suspect escaped after the shooting but was apprehended within a couple hours. Former student who bragged about his gun collection. 19th school shooting in 2018. Yep, you heard that right. 19th. Some will even say more. I guess you get in logistics and specifics when you get into school shootings. And with the death toll rising, it becomes the third deadliest in United States history. Also, this is the 10th anniversary of the shooting at NIU in DeKalb. Remember that? Think about that. Back then, it was an aberration. Today, not so much. Worst Valentine's Day news of all time, right? Also, it was Anthony Rizzo's alma mater. Just a terrible story, and one we're going to talk about tonight. But just... Closer to home, the Chicago police have charged Shamari Leggett for the killing of police commander Paul Bauer. Yesterday, Bauer was in pursuit after a suspicious man ran from police. He was shot and killed near the Thompson Center. Chicago mourns the loss of the commander, and the suspect is, ding, ding, a convicted felon who was already in prison multiple times in his life. He's 42, 40. The superintendent said 42, but the newspaper says 44. Superintendent Johnson also said some people don't deserve to walk the streets of Chicago. Leggett was arrested with a gun, drugs, and wearing body armor. You have to wonder what he was doing downtown and what would happen if the police and Commander Bauer didn't intervene. The mayor said that the city's heart hurts today and it will for a while. That's well said. The suspect, Leggett, used to play basketball at Dunbar here in Chicago, but he will never be remembered for that. He's tough two stories right there. Governor Bruce Rauner gave his budget address today in Springfield, where he made clear that he wanted to shrink the size of state government, and by doing so, will give billions in tax cuts to Illinois residents. He talked pension reform, but the reform is to make Illinois school districts pick up the tab, and that's just not how it's been done in the past. So in pushing the teacher pension burden to local school districts, who don't have any money, who ends up paying for it? So essentially, the costs and services of running government haven't changed, and some would argue they've gone up, but lawmakers want to shrink how much we pay into it. Sound familiar? The goal is not to balance a budget. The goal is to find someone else to pay for it. That's politics 2018. Whether that's schools, pensions, roads, food, cars, whatever. But the problem is, more often than not, these same lawmakers don't recognize the scope of local government, or more importantly, how it's all one big ecosystem. So yes, you may have lowered the tax burden for the state of Illinois, but the same people are paying at the city level. I mean, this is kind of the same thing that the Trump White House is looking to do, right? So right now, the White House says state should pay. Now the state is saying, no, local municipalities should pay. And then the local municipalities say, well, no, the other local municipality should pay. And this continues till the only ones that are paying are the poorest of the poor, right? USA. USA. It just seems like a swamp. I feel like we need to drain it. Something going on there. It's Ash Wednesday, which if you're not Christian is called Double Take Day. What's that on that guy's forehead? Oh, right. That's religious. This begins Lent as well, which is where you give something up until Easter. I love it. I love it. I'm doing it this year. I'm giving up watching videos online about robots that can open doors. That's my big takeaway. Have you seen this video? I need a week off from watching the beginning of the end of the humanized world. It is the creepiest thing you will see. Don't do it. Give it up for Lent. Do not look at the video of the robot that can open a door. It will haunt your dreams. In weather, it's the big melt-off. Wear a helmet. Also, where's all this water going to go? And who's going to pay for it? Also going to rain snow coming up here in early next week. I always love the rain snow. Or is it snow rain? Rain, snow. In sports, the White Sox are in the house. The Chicago White Sox and WGN Radio have agreed to a multi-year deal to air the Sox here on 720 WGN. This is exciting news and finally the push I needed to get myself a nice Aaron Rowan goatee. Right? Razor thin on the sides, Ozzie Guillen style. Anybody? Anyway, this is a huge day for WGN. We broadcast the Sox before in the team's history, but it's great to have them back in the mix. I'm looking forward to it. And yes, I'm dreaming of the summer of guaranteed rate field helmet nachos. It's going to be a ton of helmet nachos. And I'm serious. While games are on this year, we should ask the White Sox. This would be great. We should go to a game, Pete. We sit in the bleachers and we live stream the games on WGNradio.com, almost like a legitimate bootleg. So you got the regular one that everybody loves with Ed and DJ. That's happening. But then you can go to a different stream and it's me and you kind of watching the game. Half-assing it. That's what we'll call it. Half-assing it. Sox Mariners tonight. Half-assing it. Right? I'm just coming up with ideas. I'm spitballing. The Sox and the Cubs have reported, or at least pitchers and catchers have. Avisail Garcia today won his arbitration ruling, so he'll get paid more. He's now making $6 million plus a year. We'll just ask the question, what was he getting paid before? Like, Avisail, you will get $2,500 for this season. No, you want more? We're going to go to court. See, that's not a lot of money for a slugging outfielder in Major League Baseball, but beyond that, the spring training looks to be fun because all the young phenoms are in camp for the White Sox. They aren't all going to play this year, but it'll be fun to argue that they should. The Cubs introduced Yu Darvish yesterday, and today manager Joe Maddon had pitchers and catchers doing art projects or something on their first day. I'm kind of wants to bring art back to base. I'm confused. Anyway, who's not back for the Cubs this year? No John Jay, no John Lackey, no Arrieta, of course, no Hector Rondon. Ooh, Arrieta still unsigned. Isn't that crazy? Teams report to camp today. Still unsigned. One of the most winningest pitchers in baseball, modern baseball. Maybe it's the beard. Maybe they're body shaming him from when he went naked in ESPN magazine. I don't know. Last night, the Blackhawks lost their seventh in a row in Vegas, giving up 4 goals in the third period. The goaltending definitely an issue. The Hawks waived Jeff Glass today. But for all the fans hoping they can rush back Crow, maybe don't. I don't know. The Hawks are in last place and about 10-plus points back of the wild card. It's not the end of the world that they don't make the playoffs, you know? I mean, the Bears haven't been to the playoffs since 2011. We still go to games, right? We still love them. The Blackhawks will right the ship, but for now, it's taken on water. Man, if there was ever a year where the NHL could be in the Olympics, this would be the year, right? I mean, imagine if the league took a month off to go to South Korea. That might have just been the tonic that the Hawks needed, but not so. Speaking of Olympics, Shaun White won at snowboarding, which, if you believe the internet, is kind of gross. Yeah. Couple skating tonight. Molly Green will watch the Olympics for us and report on it later in the show. Northwestern got caught looking ahead to the weekend. Lost last night to Rutgers in overtime. Oh, big loss. Drops them to 15-12 amidst a 2-game losing streak. They got Michigan State in Evanston on Saturday. Almost a must-win for the Cats. They want to be considered at all for the NCAA tournament. Bulls get Chris Dunn back tonight at the Bulls take as they take on Toronto. And finally tonight, a school in Utah is forcing sixth grade girls to say yes when sixth grade boys ask them to dance at the Valentine's Day shindig. That's a thing? As an adult, I find it to be a terrible way to reinforce stereotypes and a misogynistic culture. But if you ask 12-year-old Justin, he'd say yes. A lot of no's. Back in sixth grade, so 30 years late. That's the carryout for February 14, 2018. In honor of Valentine's Day, we're selling heart-shaped hot dogs. Wait, let that image just set in. You know what? Never mind. That's gross. No. Kill it. Kill it. All right, coming up, we're going to talk about Governor Rauner's Springfield budget address today and what it means for Illinois residents and, of course, the upcoming session in Springfield. And Al Genie joins us at 8 o'clock, so stay with us. It's Download 720 WGN. Thanks, Rob. It's Download 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman in studio with us, as she is every Wednesday. AD Quigg is a reporter with The Daily Line, dailyline.net. Covers everything local, politics, Cook County, state of Illinois, with the help of Ray Hodge. Ray Hodge is a Springfield editor for The Daily Line, and she joins us on the phone as well to talk about the address to the State House today, the budget address from Governor Rauner. Ray, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for having me, Justin.
Good to see you, AD.
Thanks for having me.
All right, so big day today, and we're going to get into all the stuff. Before we get to the budget address, real quick, on the police shooting today, there was a press conference down at the police headquarters, but really about the idea that politicians, lawmakers, far and wide, especially in the city limits, have come forward to support. What's been the reaction here to the death of Commander Bauer?
Just a lot of heartbreak. I mean, Mayor Emanuel, they announced they brought charges against the shooter, and Mayor Emanuel actually got pretty teary talking about Commander Bauer and his wife and his 13-year-old daughter who are left without a father. And we saw a lot of tributes pouring in from aldermen who said, this guy was a cop's cop, a great guy, one of the good ones, was very involved on the beat. He was the Near North Commander, which was, you know, downtown, River North, that area. And all the aldermen were actually scheduled to meet with him that day. And they noticed that he was about 20 minutes late, and they thought that was really odd.
Yeah.
And a staffer came in and said, you know, this just happened across the street. I just passed the Thompson Center on the way here, and there was kind of a makeshift memorial with tons of flowers going up. It's a lot of heartbreak.
It is. And, you know, obviously there's going to be a time, and I think we're getting closer to that, to a more of an examination of the suspect in this case and his priors and the criminal record and a lot of how policy, criminal justice policy, is playing out here in the city and the county.
Right.
That has to play out in the conversation in the coming days.
Yeah. Both Alderman Hopkins and Alderman Riley said there will be a time when we talk about downtown crime. It's not this moment. Right now we're kind of in mourning, but Bauer himself was a critic of bond reform, and when they adjusted bond payments based on what people could afford, he was kind of a critic of that, saying we can't let offenders back out on the street because they will reoffend. So I think that conversation will happen, but just not right now.
And one to pay attention to, of course, in the coming days and coming weeks. The big news out of Springfield, of course, the governor gave his budget proposal, and really took shots at the balanced budget, quote unquote, that was presented, or at least presented and then vetoed, or vetoed and then the veto majority put it in place, the one that we just had, the first time we had a balanced budget in the last 3 years. Ray, it seemed like that was the point of this whole thing, was to talk about the governor was right with his veto because this budget that we're in right now is unbalanced.
Yeah, that was a major bone of contention, and it sort of came to a head with the speech. We got a hint of that about a week ago when we saw the budget chief from Governor Rauner's office come to talk to a joint panel of Senate appropriations lawmakers and, you know, letting them know, hey, we are $600 million short on things that we've had to spend for, which weren't necessarily accounted for previously in the budget. There was a lot of heat going back and forth about it. It was a sort of touch-and-go hearing. But at the end of the day, there were two major issues that you know, the budget chief brought up in terms of that imbalance or what that supplemental need was. And those two things primarily were state-mandated Medicaid payments, which, you know, they by law had to pay, but also the Department of Corrections needs as well. Now, there's also some Department of Transportation money that's going to have to be brought in as well, but that main supplement there really kind of got to the core of what he's, you know, what Rauner's position is about an imbalanced budget, because those bills kept on coming, you know, and even if you appropriate a good chunk to pay down some of the back due stuff, you know, your bill is going to keep coming every month, even if you paid off the old debt.
Yeah, I guess I'm wondering why it's not front page news. I mean, all that was made of the State House passing a balanced budget, and this was the first time they got together and they got it done and they raised the income tax. It just seems to me that if the budget is this far out of whack and we're in, what, February, that this should be front page news.
Well, one of the reasons that we're not seeing as much coverage as let's say we haven't seen coverage for as long as might be expected, is because these are things that are actually just starting to come to light. when you've got a fresh budget and you pass it and you get a bunch of your bills paid down and everyone's congratulating each other over finally getting the work done, that's one part of it, right? But then you start seeing revenues come in, and those revenues have to be accounted for and adjusted for. So even if you project what might be a really great budget and what might work, if your revenues aren't exactly where they should be, then you are definitely going to start seeing more and more signs of it. It's sort of going to, the imbalance is going to reveal itself as necessary once they start coming in. One of the big things that we're going to be watching for in April, in fact, is an update on some revenues, because just as the budget chief told us last week, you know, we've got some information about what we need that we didn't have in the budget previously. But what we're really going to be looking for is, you know, receipts that are coming in as far as our revenues in April to let us know, hey, what is the next quarter going to look like for FY18?
I definitely want to talk about pension reform, especially when it comes to teachers, and we'll get to that. The other thing, the other moment in the speech was about collaboration. The governor says that this proposal is about ideas, and he's ready to listen and to engage in collaboration with the State House. How did that play for Democrats, but then also for Republicans? Republicans who really put a lot of them that are leaving Springfield after they stuck their neck out and then were chastised by super PACs and other places. I mean, when they voted to override the veto, what was the reaction from both parties to the idea of let's collaborate?
Well, the main core that we're seeing from Republicans in both the Senate and the House is, while there might be some legislative back and forth about the assessment of the budget or what to expect, you know, Senate Democrats are going to disagree with Senate Republicans and vice versa. The one thing that we kind of did see is House Leader Bill Brady, he himself particularly was saying, look, we don't want to see a repeat of this. We don't want to have to go through this again. Of course, it's an election year, right? You've got politics and you've got some Republicans who are getting primaried. You've got Democrats that are facing tough challenges. I don't think anyone can politically really risk having quite as ugly a budget battle as what we saw last year. Mm-hmm. So the collaborative remarks certainly, you know, I think for anybody in the legislature set an optimistic tone. Whether those will play out or not, it's hard to say. But I do know that, you know, if you've got so many Republicans about to kind of walk off the field, how much is there to lose if you do have to go against your governor? You know, if you do have to make some hard choices, what kind of, you know, you've got to go home, right? You've got to come back to your district and wear whatever you did.
Yeah,
so there is some incentive to work here for collaborative reasons and for political reasons, but there's also some very strong incentive to say, hey, some of us are retiring. We got to go home with a clean conscience. If that means breaking with you again, we might have to do that. I don't think it'll come to that big of a head, though.
Ray Hodge is the Springfield editor for the Daily Line, 80 Quig, reporter here in Chicago. We're talking about the budget proposal. But when we come back, let's talk about teacher pensions. But then I also want to shift to what's happening with the sexual harassment scandal that is seems to be getting bigger around Speaker Madigan about one of his aides or people that worked for him and a recent firing. 80 and Ray in studio tonight and on the phone, and we will continue the conversation right after this. Stay with us. Thank you, Rob. 80 Quig in studio. Ray Hodge on the line from Springfield, both daily with the Daily Line, the dailyline.net. Join us on Wednesdays. We're talking about the budget proposal that was put forth by the governor. He spoke today. And then I also want to get into a couple quick things as we wrap up here. But Ray, the big thing, and I want to bring you in on this too, AD, was the teacher pension deep pickup. The idea that the governor wants to shift the burden from the state to the local municipalities to the actual districts, the school districts in the state, to pick up teacher pensions. How radical is that idea, and also how realistic is that idea?
Well, I tell you, it's an interesting thing that a lot of people have talked about very recently in terms of those pension obligations from local districts. And, you know, there's obviously the CPS issue, which that came forefront, right? The whole budget that he's proposing here is $37.6 billion. Now, out of that, he wants to cut $228 million from CPS pension, and that kind of was one of the major sticking points of last year's budget battle. But in terms of the other teacher pension costs that we're seeing from the downstate and outstate districts, what we have to remember is this very difficult bipartisan issue that slowly sort of developed and finally passed as an education funding reform.
Right.
It calculates in this new formula, it calculates those teacher pension costs. And so this, many people are saying, including the legislation's own, Senate Shepherd, Senator Andy Menar of Bunker Hill, even he had reacted to the news that Rauner wanted to allow downstate districts to pick up more pension costs. Even he said, you know, we don't know whether or not this is going to impact that funding formula overall. He said, you know, this could essentially rewrite that. So there's still a lot of questions as far as how that's going to work out. The second part of that teacher pension pickup for downstate districts is you've got a lot of pension costs in local areas right now that are starting to balloon in a really big way. Local folks are starting to get strapped more and more and more. One of the interesting things about that is, according to certain parts of state law, if a district does not pay its pension costs, it can be the funding from the state can be intercepted to put it towards local pensions. One of the places we've seen that crop up already is a sort of precarious situation going on with the downstate fire and police pensions, which are starting to get sort of very cloudy weather in terms of what the credit rating looks like.
Let me bring AD in. What is CPS? CPS hasn't said anything. They got a big pension or debt payment tomorrow. But right. What does Chicago say about this?
I mean, CPS has been in debt trouble for a very long time, and even though they got the school funding fix, that's kind of a small step out of this bog of debt that they're in. So Chicago Teachers Union came out with a statement blasting the governor's recommendation and said, you know, we got $350 million more in funding, but this would result in $220 million being taken out. So we're down. And the other thing is there are a lot of suburban school districts that pay for their pensions and for school operations with property taxes.
Right.
So if you force schools to pay more, that just means property taxes go up, and then
The governor is against.
Exactly.
And has actually looked to legislation to say I want caps on this.
Right.
So it really is, and the one thing I will take away, Ray, from the speech was he said hopefully by putting this payment on local municipalities, they will get creative in how they reduce their cost.
Sure. You know, there's merit to that, right? Because you've got a lot of people who are trying to come up with pension solutions in a local way that are, you know, that are putting these ideas forward. But you don't see a lot of those play out in the actual halls of the Capitol. The ideas that tend to get traction, that gain steam, are ideas that are sort of not coming from very small local levels. They're coming from people who have been dealing with this in an experienced legislative way for quite a while. But it also, you know, to their credit and to the local, you know, if I'm speaking on behalf of the locals or if I'm looking at it from that perspective, I'm thinking, I'm already kind of strapped for cash here, right? I don't know where the money's going to come from. We've just come out of a two-year budget impasse. Schools haven't really picked up any of that money just yet. They're still waiting on that to come in. To recalculate it at this point throws a lot of doubt about the process, and it throws a lot of uncertainty into the future of how you're going to generate those revenues.
Ray Hodge is the Springfield editor for The Daily Line. AD Quinn is a Chicago reporter. Big week coming up here, AD, real quick.
Yes, we're going to get a report on the Cook County assessment system, and we're also going to hear if Andrea Rayla gets kicked off the ballot.
That's coming up this week, and we obviously have to have you guys back because we'll talk about Mike Madigan and the sexual harassment scandal that's continuing, but we're out of time. Ray, AD, thanks for joining. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks, Rob. It's a download here, 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Coming up at 9 o'clock, Ruby Boots in studio. She is a new, actually an old artist who's been on all over, Australian artist, roots, country, rock and roll. She had won, I think it was like the alt country star of the year in Australia for like 5 years running. And she's just signed with Bloodshot Records right here in Chicago, and she is relocated to Nashville, and she's going to be in studio playing songs from her new album. And I'm excited too because it's perfect for Valentine's Day, although they're all breakup songs. I'm not going to lie to you, but that's part of love, too, right? It's all, I don't have to tell the resident philosopher, that's part of love, too, right?
Having and losing lets you have more and lose more later.
Tonight, we welcome back our resident philosopher, Al Jeany, to the program. Al, of course, joins us once a month. He's the professor of business ethics at Loyola University Chicago's Quinlan School of Business. At first, we thought we were going to do some love relationship topic because it is indeed Valentine's Day. But we did that last year.
Yeah.
And you can find that convo at WGNradio.com, along with all the others with Al. Search Al Jeany. Tonight, we settled on a topic. We've been talking about doing this one for a while. Democracy. Our form of government and what makes it work and what are the challenges. It worked out because the author and Yale history professor Timothy Snyder just wrote a book on tyranny and its attack on democracy. Of course, that might be in response to what many critics have observed from the White House. But for our purposes, this book gives us the entry into exploring democracy through its threats. That's what we're going to do tonight. And we do want to talk about that. We're going to do it all night. Not all night, just for an hour. But we wanted to start talking about the Florida school shooting today and the continuing helplessness and politicizing that we see and what is one of the biggest issues of our time, safety. What can be done to prevent tragedies like today? What can we find? Can we find the answers in democracy itself? Professor Al Jeany, good to see you, bud.
Good to see you. And, you know, this is a touching topic. I think 14 to 16 gun shootings have occurred in schools around the nation since the beginning of the year. Either a gun on campus or on the program, or somebody actually shot.
I've seen that number in so many different forms today.
Yeah, and today I think is the anniversary of NIU. Where five students, I'm sorry, I call them children, forgive me, I've been teaching for so long, I don't think of them as children, they are young adults, were shot down, you know, without any rhyme or reason. And I do understand, I must tell you, the philosophy behind our founding fathers and the right to bear arms, because guns were part of the frontier life. And in 1776, 97% of America was rural and 3% was urban. And guns were allowed because they were necessary for survival. They were necessary to defend oneself against not just the government, but against everything. And also, because we had guns, we formed armies. These were not, everybody picked up their gun and marched off to war. Just as in the Civil War, most of the South were actually their own arms. And so this was part of a real tradition. But now 98% of America and only 2 to 3% of America is urban, and only 2 to 3% of America is rural.
Interesting.
And guns are now different. I think I want to stress this again and again and again and again. I remember that M16 that I could take apart blindfolded 50-some years ago, only shot 16 and fired in three-round clips, one, three, or a continuous fire. And this was innovation. Now an M16 is absolutely a toy in comparison to the velocity, to the power, and to the bullet capability. So that you got hit by an M16, I hit you in the armor, in the lower side, it may have blown out something there. But the bullet passed through, or the bullet lodged there. Now the bullet tumbles through the body, and a wound that would otherwise you could walk away from now kills you. And so in a very real sense, guns have changed. And I think from a philosophical view, we clearly cannot eradicate murder, mayhem, madness, jealousy, anger from the human condition. But I think we do need to curtail and reassess and look at the range of options we have available for the public. I thought when the Connecticut shooting happened, how long ago was that?
Yeah.
I thought when Obama was up there, and when people made fun of Obama, I thought, my God, how can you think somebody could fake that? When children that young were killed, it would change everything. But I think we have to ask ourselves, do we need a national plebiscite in regard to guns? I would take that risk. I think the NRA is a very powerful, very intelligent, and parts of which totally defensible, you know, a group. But I'm not sure the whole world, I mean, if we had a plebiscite, my plebiscite, I mean, from the Roman times, everybody voted on this, that we would say, let's have any arms. Now, let me be very clear on this. I think that, you know, I think we should be ashamed by the murder of so many innocent victims. And as a democracy, I think we should be doubly ashamed because can't we debate, and that's what we're going to talk about tonight, and create a middle ground between unlimited access and no access at all? I don't like either posture. There's got to be some middle ground.
And we're talking about that tonight. And that's why we're talking about this particular issue today, because are there is democracy itself, is it the tool to take this on? Yeah. Is democracy, the form of our government, the actual tool for the people who are on social media right now saying, enough with your thoughts and prayers, we need action?
Yeah.
Is democracy the way
through this? I think
it
is, because don't forget, what the NRA is doing is blocking things in Congress, and congressmen and senators have voting blocks and constituents to take care of, and they're really doing this. But I think as a nation, when we look at these killings, especially the killing of children, I think killing others demonstrates our anger and irrationality, but killing children demonstrates evil. And I can't believe as a nation we want to condone this. And I also can't believe as a nation we want to be disarmed. I think that there's a real argument to have a pistol in a house for protection or some version. But this notion that we could buy a gun that could take out a squad of men with, you know, one clip is wrong. This thing that happened in Las Vegas this summer, Have we forgotten that? Have we forgotten the people that were just slaughtered while they were watching music? Half of them not even knowing what was going on until blood was splattering all over them because of the music so loud, so on and so forth. But again, killing children, even when they're killed by children, demonstrates a certain madness or unregularity in our lives that we have to address. And to say, you know, my mother used to say, don't ever mention sex, religion, money, or illness. Well, what else is there to talk about in the human condition? I wanted to ask my mother. And to say that we shouldn't discuss this is to be to be political ostriches. And I think we do have to discuss this. And I would argue for, we do have a plebiscite, that we do vote on this after a serious debate.
I think you're absolutely right. There needs to be a discussion. And I think more than any, there needs to be a respect and a decorum to hear from all sides.
Absolutely.
Because it's important for people to be able to be heard and respected, especially if you fall and onto the side of you are pro-gun and you want and you interpret the Second Amendment in a certain way. We want to be able to hear, and democracy is a way to get that argument together,
and again,
to organize it.
There's all sorts of reasons to have guns. Hunting, although I'm not a hunter anymore after spending so much time in Africa. There's reasons for hunting. There's real reason for having a gun in regard to animals and you know, farming, so on and so on. Wolves, for example, have to be maintained. There's a whole series of reasons. There's a series of reasons for having a personal gun in certain kinds of settings. Yes, 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 yes. But you just had somebody on talking about the gentleman who was shot yesterday. Yeah. Where'd this guy get a gun? Right. Of course, criminals always can get guns. And the real sadness is, I'm sure, and I, without going into details, I sort of explored this for 10 minutes after we emailed each other today. I think I could get a gun in within an hour and a half.
Wow.
And that's wrong.
Yeah.
And ladies and gentlemen, I don't want a gun and so on and so forth. And there's something wrong in that. There is something wrong in that. And these rules, and that's an illegal gun. And now I'm talking about these
the
legal setup
right.
that allow you to go to these unlimited or undocumented fairs and to buy a gun openly in front of people is kind of scary. And I also don't understand why any hunter needs a magazine that carries 20 to 42 bullets.
Professor Al Genie in studio tonight. We're talking democracy. We're going to have that conversation about tyranny and democracy and the threats and what we can learn about democracy from its threats. The professor of business ethics at Loyola University Chicago's Quinlan School of Business in studio with us, as he is every month here on The Download. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back. Stay with us. Studio tonight, our download resident philosopher, Al Genie. He's professor of business ethics at the Quinlan School of Business at Loyola University Chicago. Tonight we're talking democracy. Our first segment is really about the school shooting today in Florida. And as 773 makes a good point about, and it's a great way for us to start our conversation that we had planned, was that forefathers knew the dangers of tyrannical government. And that's why they had the Second Amendment. That's why the right to bear arms. And that was a big reason why it all came together and why democracy is in place in the United States of America.
And
so let's talk about that.
Yeah, certainly Jefferson said later in his career after a certain point, I think when he was Secretary of State, that the tree of democracy has to be fed with the blood of patriots and tyrants every 20 years. He wasn't advocating war, and he didn't literally mean that we should go to war, but that every generation thinking in terms of 10 and 20 years as a generation, no one generation could speak forever for all other generations.
They have to be reminded.
So you have to remind us, you have to redo it and relook at it. But the option of violence was always there, and the reality was that violence was the only way. I found a fascinating quote by Nietzsche, not the funniest and my favorite philosopher, but he says, but those who would fly the flag and seek power have to abandon history and abandon the notion that truth and disarmament will be part, the way to do it. But this comes to our book tonight. And
I think, what's the book?
On Tyranny, 20 Lessons from the 20th Century by Timothy Snyder. And it's a runaway bestseller. According to Jason Smith of the Book Table in Oak Park, 250,000 copies in 15 months.
Wow.
Now, my book, The Importance of Being Funny, is sold 17 books altogether in the last 8 months. But think about that. An academic book, a serious academic. Yeah, thanks very much. You were the guy.
Yeah,
you were the guy.
Yeah.
But an academic book that's really there. And what the book is, there are two unsaid theses in the book. This book is, yes, can be construed, and he says it is a direct response to Mr. Trump and some of his cavalier attitudes and his attacks on the media and his political tribalism and his adversarial style. But the real unsaid thesis is a play on Churchill. Democracy is by no means a perfect form of government, but considering all the other alternatives, it's the best we have available to us. But it must be protected, refreshed, and maintained for it to work. And so the other implied thesis is that eternal vigilance is the price of liberty, mm-hmm. and that we always have to look at it. So I take this book, and it's 20 specific points, and we're only going to talk about 12 of them because some of them are too specific.
Too specific,
right. It's really a defense of participatory democracy. What do we have to do, participatory democracy? You know, your son is young, but you're going to find out somewhere along the line you're going to have this conversation with him, not about the birds and the bees, about getting a job and working hard. You know, I mean, showing up, putting time in,
yeah,
so on and
absolutely
so forth.
Right.
You have to work.
Yeah,
you know, I can't. I said to my son somewhere along the line when he failed out of college for the third time, every professor's dream, right? I said, you know, Jason, when I die tomorrow, I can't give you the professorship. I'll give you, you know, you get what's in the bank, and that won't last that long. You have to earn it yourself. And I think democracy, we pass it down from generation to generation, but each generation has to relook at it and reboot it. And I think this book is really about three major English thinkers. And the first is John Stuart Mill, believe it or not. I went to school with him, but we weren't really close in the 18th century, 19th century. He said the key activity of egalitarian society is to study and pursue the nature and the limits of power, which can be legitimately exercised by a society over individuals.
So essentially understanding what power is.
Yeah, understanding what it is and understanding that when you use it, it's not just this. This is not this Machiavellian thing. You can do anything you want with it. What are the limits? And what's the range?
And that, and I'm not trying to make this at all about what's happening in our current political experience, but you see a lot of the pushback when we talk about the vigilance and people pushing back at some of the decisions made in the White House. It has to do with the fact that the check of power, saying, yes, you have this unlimited power, but you don't have the right to use it in that way.
You don't have the right to use it. And then the other two points really point up that this is participatory. Churchill said, the real test of a civilized nation is the ability to tolerate opposition, unpopular points of view, and dissent. In other words, free thinking, free speech, and the right to dissent are critical parts. And so we have a right to do that. In fact, one of the things that I really feel it's unfortunate that Mr. Trump even spoke to this in his union, the kneeling down for football. We're both football lovers and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
And yes, it was a distraction. But you know what? That's part of our right as a citizen. I disagree. They were very clear. We're not dishing the flag. We're not.
It wasn't about veterans. It's about,
this is about protest.
Yeah.
And I think we've forgotten the right to protest.
I wonder, and I want to stay on this one real quick. Well, maybe we'll stay here and then we'll go to the break, but we'll pick up with the third. But that's a fascinating thought, because right now, dissent in this country, whether it, and let's just talk about political dissent, and people who are not with the status quo or want to push back on something, and that could be on the left or the right. We've seen it on both sides. There is we all know about the echo chamber.
Yeah.
But there's less of even tolerance for the other side.
Yeah,
there's less. You see it with when Steve Bannon's going to come to the University of Chicago.
Right.
And they're going to protest. He can't even come talk.
And I want to defend the right of University of Chicago and Steve Bannon to be there. Every fool has a right to speak, even if every fool is not right. And I do not agree with Steve Bannon, but I think democracy means you should not necessarily respectfully. What does that mean? Tea and crumpets. Right, I mean, somehow, somehow have the right to have that dialogue. That's
but you
really
see that
critically
and
important.
I see it. I see it in the echo chambers of the left, and I also see it on the right.
Absolutely.
I mean, you saw it with Obama in this way of not really recognizing or respecting one side. You see with the
absolutely.
With the left, it's
liberals
saying I'm not even
just
listening. Yeah.
Liberals are just as guilty. And there was a wonder. I found this wonderful. By the way, Churchill is the one who's saying, listen, I've got to convince because half of England in 1938, 39 were willing to say, well, you know, this Nazi is not that bad. You know, maybe it's going to be a nice guy. Let's see what happens here.
Let's just retire. Let's just surrender
just
and see what happens.
Let's see what happens and let's give in.
He had to convince
the aristocracy and the general public that it is better to die than to let this man come forward, to appease this man. And that's part of democracy.
Yeah,
and maybe we'll do a show on great man theory and what Churchill was as a charismatic leader. This is incredible stuff for a democracy. And if I get a chance to throw in the third one, then we can talk about it. Orwell said, if liberty means anything at all, it means the right to tell people what they don't want to hear.
Nah. That's what we're talking about. The right to tell people what they don't want to hear.
That's right. Now,
and
it's how you say it.
It's how you say it, obviously, when we talk about decorum debate.
Right.
But that plays into the conversation that's happening around the
absolutely.
School shooting today and, of
absolutely.
Course, what's happening in this country right now. Professor Al Jeaney, my resident download philosopher here on the program, who's the professor of business ethics at the Quinlan School of Business at Loyola University of Chicago, joins us once a month. We'll take a quick break here. 312-981-7200 if you want to get in on the action. But right now we'll take a break and then we'll get the news with Rob Martier and we'll be back. So stay with us. Thank you, Rob. It is a download here, 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. In studio with me, the resident philosopher of the download's resident philosopher, Professor Al Jeaney. He's a professor of business ethics at the Quinlan School of Business at Loyola University of Chicago. Tonight, he's with us as he is every month. Tonight, we talk democracy. Been having a spirited conversation about what it means to have a strong democracy, but also what are the challenges and threats. You just laid out what we needed for the three, and we got to liberty right before the news, and then we kind of shortchanged it. So maybe bring that one back.
Well, this notion of liberty is that, as Orwell suggested that.
Yeah, Orwell suggested it.
Liberty means anything, if anything at all, it means the right to tell people what they don't want to hear. And what we're talking about here is knowledge. And to one more Englishman, Francis Bacon, 16th century, knowledge is power. And if that's ever been true, we know that now with computerization. We know that now what's going on with
Russia. Is he talking about the concept of telling leaders and authority what they don't want to hear?
The concept about basic facts. We're talking about, you know, false news, fake news. The fake news, it's not objective. It is biased or prejudicial. Mm-hmm. All these comedy shows are not fake news shows. They are real news shows that are making fake satirical comments about it, so on and so forth. But now Orwell's really talking about that totalitarianism comes in and stays in when you can control knowledge. And knowledge, once you control facts, whoever controls the present, he says, controls the past. He who controls the past controls the future. So you begin to define what truth is.
Right.
Truthiness is not just a clever concept done by Stephen, will you pronounce it for me?
Colbert.
Thank you very much. You made fun of me all the time, Stephen Colbert. Truthiness is truth as I understand it to be. He made it whimsical, but he was really putting it to Bill O'Reilly on it. And this is the actual key of what Orwell is talking about. The notion that it can't be truth, it has to be objective truth. There's this famous story about Senator Moynihan from Massachusetts years ago debating this topic with his nemesis on the Republican side. And finally the Republican said, well, you know, this is just a matter of differences here and that you're going to see it your way and I'm going to see it my way. He says, that's right. You have a right to your opinion, I have a right to my opinion. But you got to get the facts straight. And you don't have your facts straight before you're making an opinion. And so that becomes this whole notion of fake news. It becomes scary. And what this leads to is the essential paradox of democracy.
Okay, so let's get to the essential paradoxes
The essential paradox of democracy is that a democracy can, in fact, through the ballot box, do what the bullet can do for you. That we can, in fact, elect our own demise. We can, in fact, that is, without reflection, without due consideration, without due debate, without due input, elect wrong people, wrong policies.
I was going to say, this is where the democracy, there's two things I see where democracy can be subjectified, right?
Yeah.
One is going to be this case where an uninformed populace, or uninformed, doesn't matter, but the point being that we undo democracy by by voting and
by
voting
not
the
having
wrong
the correct
people
knowledge
in.
Base to make the right decision.
The other one is manipulation,
right?
And this concept that there are other ways that manipulate the and what we see a lot of times from we see it with the Chicago politicians, we see it in Washington politicians, where they have found ways to subvert that
absolutely.
That they use voting blocks and
depends
little
what
things
you mean
that,
by the word is.
Right.
I mean, could you believe the man got away with that? It depends what you mean by the word is. Bill Clinton, semi-demagogue.
Right.
But what we're really talking about is not just factoids, but the notion of what's truth. And Orwell talked about, you know, doublespeak, you know, so war is peace and peace is unacceptable and so on and so forth. When you begin to change things. If you want an example of the nudes, how about Polish death camps? That the Polish government has now made it illegal to use that phrase and to talk about the Poles as a people being responsible for anything the Germans did.
Yeah.
Certain individual Poles. What they're doing is changing the facts.
Well, that's
and altering
that's,
the facts.
I love that because I got yelled at on Facebook not too long ago because I had a Holocaust survivor in. And I said that the survivor was in a Polish concentration camp.
Yeah.
And the listener came at me, was very respectful, but she pointed out that was not accurate because what it was a
Nazi camp located in Poland.
And they want to make the distinction because Poland was not responsible
right.
for it.
But what the government is doing right now is really trying to say yeah. that the no Poles had, you know, the Polish government had
right.
nothing to do with this. And of course, there was.
But let's get back to our democracy. When we talk about, when we just mentioned the two things right there about voting, it is interesting because today we even talked about with the school shooting that happened in Florida, what are the tools available to us as a society to try and get at something that we sometimes feel that we are helpless to avoid? Meaning, how can we change the system so that we will not have this happen in our society? One of those tools is to go to the voting booth. That's
right.
what's been talked
right.
about. But that also
But it's
has-
how you get to the voting booth. It's what you bring to the voting booth. And so when you look at this lovely little book, he's saying all these are little rules, 12 of the 20 are little rules of how to be an informed citizen. How to be a prepared citizen. You have to be prepared. Remember, Hitler did win an election in 1933.
Right.
And so did FDR. And he did win an election, but within a year he became total dictator. And so fascism, which is really from the fascisti, from the word in Italian, that bundle, they were all together, were all, you know, one person, one leader, ein Reich, ein Volk, ein Führer, the one state, one people, one ruler. And so he then became the total dictator. But you have to remember, it's easy enough to have a democratic authoritarianism. That is, that people elect because of fear, ignorance, lack of participation, a lack of real knowledge, elect the wrong person openly.
Yeah.
And so you really have a problem.
I wonder about it, too, because we're such a politicized nation at this point where you will be nodding your head for two different presidents.
Right.
If you are on the left, you're listening to this right now and you're going, yep, that's what happened with Donald Trump.
Yep.
That's what's happened. If you're on the right, you're going, that sounds a lot like Barack Obama.
Right.
That sounds like, you know, I mean, it could go either way. And at a certain point, the question is that our democracy is one that is by percentage points. I mean, it's a 51-49 win one way or the other. And there's going to be one side, 49%, that is unhappy with the results. How do we as a society use our government to come together, in a sense.
How do we create a government to do that? And I want to a little self-referential comments here. I'm teaching a leadership course right now, an advanced leadership course, 50 students right now. And believe me, I'm doing it in theoretical, what is power, and using the presidency and the American presidency as kind of the quintessential notion of
leadership
power,
position,
leadership, how it really can't be done because of the new system, so on and so forth. And I'm going out of my way not to mention Mr. Trump. Because I don't want to prejudice them to the real theories behind that.
Yeah.
He's still, you know, and you could just sit there and they would hate me for it, so on and so forth. So what I want to look at is the overriding issues that lead to a more stable democracy is, first of all, one of the things is for participatory government, do not blindly accept, obey in advance. Be prepared, be critical, be skeptical, not cynical always. Ask questions, examine issues, avoid simple conformity. You're not children. We've got an obligation. And when people don't do that, they abdicate that, and then they complain. I'm sorry. Did you not know? My wife just chided me recently. There was a big thing in the village, and I didn't read it at all. And I said, well, what happened there? And he said, well, it was on your desk. You know, it's your fault.
Yeah.
And so there's something that we have, and he's really talking about that overreaching issue in democracy is we are not self-sustained, and we don't know our facts, and we don't know our issues, and we don't debate, and we don't debate civilly. This is really important. You can be angry, you could be hostile, you could debate, but as soon as we start to yell, rationality is out the door. Then we're simply yelling, and I think it's so difficult to do that. And I find it really ironic that the Parliament of England, they yell and scream at each other, but then there's also time when there's quiet, and you get to say.
Yeah.
But I think that what's missing here is an informed electorate is just as vital as a prepared leader. But the informed electorate has to be informed and stay informed.
It to me is just fascinating when I think about the issues, especially when you talk about foreign agents that possibly would be messing with elections, which essentially means messing with democracy. You get this concept that, if you can uninform, I know that's not the
right
verb for this, but if you can uninform an electorate or misinform an electorate, and that's essentially what fake news or what's happening with social media accounts, and
right.
if you can essentially hijack the informed part of the electorate, you can
that's right.
hijack democracy.
That's right. Margaret Atwood, when she was in Chicago this fall, had the great privilege and honor of sitting next to her at least for a second when the photos were being taken, so on and so forth. She said, bottom line, words, they equal power. So be careful of the words you use. Language matters. Don't just shake your head. Don't just look away. Pay attention. Look what that symbol means. Understand what that really means. And play with it. The media and words in the Post film, the Post, which I thought.
Did you like it?
Well, I liked the message, but I lived through that era. And certainly, I remember sitting there for days and days and days then watching, Watergate. I thought it, at best, was a television one-hour film with two great stars in it. But here's two quotes that have really moved me. That the Daily News, the newspaper, is really the first draft of history. And so what's in that paper is really important. But secondly, when they went to Ellsberg, the Supreme Court defended their right to publish the Ellsberg papers, that the Supreme Court said the press's real job was to serve the governed and not the governors.
Let me play devil's advocate for just a moment. I don't believe this because I come from a background, I have a journalism degree, everything in between. But there is a movement in this country that the people who are writing the news, as you just said, the first draft of history, are biased.
Yeah.
That it's not fake news in the sense that they're making up facts or trying to trick you, they're a foreign hacker in a basement. That these people who are writing the first draft of history have already an agenda before they write it. What's that effect on democracy?
I'm not a journalist major. And I could barely type, but no, I'm just serious. Number two pencils. But the reality is there is place for total bias in the most objective paper. It's called the editorials.
Sure.
And editorials, Eric Zorn can say, I like stinkin' poops. And here's my reason for stinking poops, even though all of Chicago wants a stinking poop.
Sure,
whatever
it
is.
I understand.
An editorial is
I'm not talking about editorial.
Right.
I'm
but
talking
what's
about
what's happened now in the last 50 right. years is that papers now, the gray lady is not the gray lady. The gray lady is a Democratic liberal organ, and the Washington Post is da-da, and it's happened. That. And the Tribune, when I was in high school, was, so far to the right.
Yeah.
It was so conservative.
Colonel McCormick,
and certainly it's moved ages down that spectrum immensely. But yes, the news outlets now, as Obama said at one time, I thought an absolute candor, well, I don't watch Fox News because I can't stand feeling that bad. Or who are they talking about?
Yeah.
They're talking about me? I can't even recognize what they're talking about, and it's me. And yet, Maddow on TV, this is a totally Democratic, progressive, FDR progressive agenda, Keynesian analysis of.
I wonder when. In the lens that we're talking about tonight, as we start to wrap up here, the lens is what are the threats? Tyranny is a threat, and that's what Timothy Snyder does in his book. Is he leads 20 things that are a threat to democracy.
Right, that's right.
One of the questions I have is if it's not just about an uninformed electorate. How important is it that you mentioned right at the top, we talked about facts and making sure that that's an objective.
And it's
you
also
talked about Senator Moynihan.
This is a crisis of both.
How do you make sure that is not hijacked?
And I don't know the answer. I'm just a critic. Yeah. But I do know that the problem is double whammy. A, the electorate is not sufficiently informed, doesn't know how to make distinctions. B, the press itself has become so biased. Here's
the people who are making the news.
Here's the
source.
Statistic. Right. In 1976, only 28% had confidence in the media. Only 28%. As of this year, and this is University of Chicago Newark survey, right down the block here, 8%.
That's
what
terrible.
Does that
That's
say?
Terrible.
What does that say?
Okay, so let me ask this then, as we talk about the threats to democracy. We're only talking about one part. We're talking about media. The other part that seems to always rear its head is the fact that they're special interest.
Yeah.
Special interest, money. Money plays a big role in democracy. We see how it plays out in politics and how it changes laws or protects laws, or as we just talked about with the school shootings and how many we've had just in this year. That always harkens back to a strong lobby.
Right.
So how does that play a part in dismantling democracy? And how does democracy overcome special interests that may or may not have been there when it was deceived?
Yeah, well, you know, the bottom line is money talks. Money buys enough time to get an agenda out. Money buys the correct spokesman. Money buys the correct craftsman, the right wordsmiths to put this out. And that is the dilemma. Who are we listening? In fact, I would suggest that we have a surfeit of news. Having said that, in the 19th century, in Chicago alone, I think there were 22 papers, and I think there were 8 dailies when Lincoln was made president, because we were a typographical society. That was the main form of communication. Yeah. Every time Lincoln spoke, if it was extemporaneous, he ran inside and wrote it down and gave it to a press, say, please print this. This is what really meant to say. Words were critical. I think we've lost the essential beauty, structure, and value of carefully chosen words. We have a surfeit of information, and I think that bombardment of information leads a lot of us to just turn it off. NPR, we know if you turn on NPR, NPR is supposed to be unbiased. You've got to be kidding. Of course it isn't unbiased.
Right.
Maybe an unbiased liberal perspective, but it certainly has a perspective. And so I think one of the real dilemmas is this knowledge explosion that we have hasn't necessarily produced clarity, but further confusion.
Last point is about isolationism.
Yeah.
And how democracy is a global phenomenon.
Yeah.
There's going to be different types of government, but democracy has obviously spread around the world. We fought for it in different generations in this country. When we talk about isolationism when it comes to our country, or saying this is America first or otherwise, how does that affect the ecosystem that is democracy on this planet?
Well, I think that you got to remember, I don't think we're ever going to have a fascistic takeover of this nation. No one person is going to come in there and say, the Führer Prinzip, I'm taking over, I'm the ruler. But we may have, as I said, this notion of authoritarian democracy that people elect the bully in. Because, and I think when that happens is because the loss of national identity, financial crisis, spiritual intellectual crisis, fear of others, outsiders, eradication of objective standards of truth, that's when it could happen. And I think the real danger is assuming this is like Pledge Week at WBZ. I'm not going to pledge today because somebody else will and it'll be okay.
Yeah.
No, if you want a democracy, it means you have to participate just like everyone else has to do it.
Participation, that's it. Al Jeanney, professor of business ethics at the Quinlan School of Business at the Loyola University of Chicago. He joins us once a month to take on the big ticket items. He'll be back next month. Professor, good to see you.
Good to see you.
Welcome back to Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, my next guest just signed to Chicago's Bloodshot Records. Country rock singer-songwriter Ruby Boots left home at a young age as a teenager, but she came to the U.S. in 2016 and found a home in the South, living in Nashville. But she continues to have a huge following back home in Australia. But she's now working with the esteemed Chicago label Bloodshot, and her debut album on the label is out. It's called Don't Talk About It, and the collection of songs of love and heartbreak are getting great reviews. Ruby Boots in studio tonight, perfect for Valentine's Day. And she starts us off live in studio with the song I'll Make It Through, Ruby Boots.
I'm the one you want, baby. I'm the one you need. Is that why you hurt me, baby? Is that why I bleed? I know that you love me, baby, 'cause I aim to please. I'll hold the door, baby, if you're aiming to leave. Even if it's tough, I ain't gonna fake it. If it hurts, well, you know I can take it. And if I can't, well, honey, I'll break this whole thing in two. Oh, and even if the walls come tumbling down, well, you know I won't make a sound. I'll lie here, dead on the ground, just hurting for you. Oh, leave me with the trouble, baby, I'll make it through. Life is a gamble, I took a chance on you. I'm more than you can handle, baby, won't you tell me it's true? Lit up like a candle, baby, my heart burning blue. But I'm bound to ramble, baby, ain't waiting round on a fool. Even if it's tough, I ain't gonna fake it. If it hurts, well, you know I can take it. And if I can't, well, honey, I'll break this whole thing in two. Oh, and even if the walls come tumbling down, well, you know I won't make a sound. I'll lie here, dead on the ground, just hurting for you. Leave me with the trouble, baby, I'll make it through. It's a crying shame you treat me like you do. Hard to tame. Words have lost their truth, and baby, so have you. Even if it's tough, I ain't gonna fake it. If it hurts, well, you know I can take it. And if I can't, well, honey, I'll break this whole thing in two. And even if the walls come tumbling down, well, you know I won't make a sound. I'll lie here, dead on the ground, just hurting for you. Leave me with the trouble, baby, I'll make it through. I'll leave me with the trouble, baby, just like you do. Leave me with the trouble, baby, I'll make it through.
Yeah. Ruby Boots in studio, singer-songwriter, country rock and roll. Of course, her new album, Don't Talk About It, is out on Chicago's Bloodshot Records. Ruby, thank you so much for coming in and playing. Perfect for Valentine's Day. Heart and Heartbreak. We love it. Good to meet you.
Good to meet you. Thanks for having me.
As I mentioned, you grew up in Australia. Mm-hmm. You have now live in Nashville, Tennessee. But talk about your attraction to this kind of music, to the country rock and roll, because it's a great fit to be in Nashville. This is a Nashville sound. But talk about your days growing up in Australia and what attracted you to this style.
Yeah, I guess it's hard to feel like I fit anywhere. It's not a kind of a cliche artist thing to say is, you know, oh, I'm not really sure what I sound like. But there's so much that has attracted me to Nashville and roots music, I guess. There's so much that roots music encompasses, you know, this, and I think the word Americana is very freely thrown around in Nashville, and the way that I understand Americana is more so than country, which is a little bit more of something that does fit inside a box, whereas Americana is something for me that it kind of allows you just to do whatever you want to do, and that's really within... You know, my spirit, I guess.
Well, I mean, when you hear the music, yeah, I guess it falls into the roots category, and like you said, Americana, but I hear rock and roll.
Totally.
I mean, I really hear it, especially how much passion you put into the song.
Yeah, you know, I've always had a bit of a punk heart, and I think that comes out in my lyrics. And so, hence me kind of saying that that whole blanket of Americana, it's like there's so much rock and roll happening under that blanket as well, you know. So,
what kind of music were you listening to when you were in Australia? When you were a teenager, before you left?
When I was young, I was growing up in the grunge period, so I listened to a lot of Nirvana, Pearl Jam, Soundgarden, Smashing Pumpkins. So, and it's so interesting to kind of like think back in that time. It's such an influential time listening to music, the kind of music that you listen to as a teenager, as a young teenager. And I guess as moving into my later teenage years is when I really discovered people like Bob Dylan and Joan Baez and Janis Joplin, and I was like, wow, what is this?
When you left Australia, you left at an early age, early teenage, at 14 years old.
Yeah, I kind of left home at 14. I had a pretty rocky start to my early life, and I actually stayed within Australia, but I moved up the coast of West Australia, and it's a very big coast, so it takes... You know, it took me from Perth, West Australia, to get up to where I was, and that's not even near the whole coast. It was a 32-hour drive, you know. So I went up to a town called Broome, and it's beautiful up there, and there's a really big pearling industry. Note the use of the pronunciation of my letter R. I'm learning. People are not... really catching on to what the industry is. And I was working out at sea for quite a few years, and that was around 19 to 22. I turned 21 out at sea.
What an amazing place to be at 21 years old, to be working on the sea. How do you think those experiences, leaving home at such an early age, living... you know, your teenage years independent, working on the sea, as you just mentioned. How do you think that affects the music that you play now when you think about the songs that you write and the ideas that you explore?
Yeah, I think it just comes down to a life experience. And I feel like I've led five different lives before I started playing music professionally, at least. You know, I learned guitar out on the boats, on a houseboat. There was nothing else to do. I was driving everyone crazy because the walls were so thin, like paper thin. But incidentally enough, all these years later, I've had people that I've worked with all back then kind of get in touch with me online and say, you did drive us crazy, but we're really happy. We're really happy it was for something, you know. Right. So that's a silver lining. I think living a life that perhaps isn't full of comfort and ease and just something that kind of lifts you up from the start, and having to grow up really fast and learn a lot of things very early on in life, that's a really great place for an artist to be writing from. I think my awareness grew exponentially very early, and it allows you to encompass a sense of empathy that maybe I might not have if I had led a different kind of life. Oh, right. You know?
Ruby Boots, my guest. She is a singer-songwriter who's out on Bloodshot Records with the new album Don't Talk About It. She was just in town here in Chicago, and she's our guest tonight. All right, we'll take a quick break. When we come back, we got to talk a little bit about the love song, because the way you do love songs is a little different. but it's a perfect topic for Valentine's Day. Ruby Boots, my guest in studio. Stay with us. Welcome back to Download Here, 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. My guest in studio, Ruby Boots, a singer-songwriter, Americana roots, country rock and roll. She is on Bloodshot Records with the new album Don't Talk About It, which is a collection of tremendous song. Such great reviews. And I love the album because you can feel that, and we kind of talked about this in the last segment, that it's coming from a place. It's a lot of heartbreak. It's a lot of songs about love and love lost. But it feels like it's real. It's not something that was written for you that was like, here, sing this song about how your heart was broken. It really does feel like your heart was broken.
Yeah. It's interesting because I feel internally that I'm a lot stronger than what I used to be. Like, I have definitely experienced a lot of heartache over the years, but I feel like this album's a little bit of a reclamation almost. Mm-hmm. That, yes, I understand what heartbreak is, but I can swim through it.
I love it. And it's a fitting conversation for Valentine's Day, and we talk about love, but there's a traditional type of love song, and then songs that come out of the country rock and roll sphere, not unlike the ones that are on Don't Talk About It, where love may be the center of it, but it's about all the emotions, the good and the bad, that surround it.
Yeah, sure. I feel bad talking about heartbreak on Valentine's Day.
But it's real.
But I'm wishing all the lovers out there a very happy Valentine's Day. But yes, yeah, you know, and a lot of the songs on the record aren't necessarily about love between two people necessarily. It's about, there's a lot of love and understanding and heartbreak with different scenarios in life. Don't Talk About It, the title track, is kind of about understanding that, yeah, there is a lot of heartache in life, but you have to process it and grow from it. And if you don't and you keep putting those blinkers on and powering through, then it will catch up with you, you know. So,
and on the album, there's other elements as well. I mean, there's the Don't Break My Heart Again concept. There's the infatuation concept. I mean, there's a lot that's going into, and why I think it is appropriate, because there's this idea of what we know to be a love song, which can be trite, cliche, and just about things that we think we're all relating to. But when I listen to your music, I'm relating much more to the things that surround it. This idea of what it means to be let down, but also to trust again. The idea of what it means to let your infatuation kind of run away with you. Those kind of issues.
Sure. It's funny because whenever anyone brings up infatuation, it's definitely written in from a place where, how you described, but it was birthed from a conversation I had with two Australian friends who were in Nashville, Geordie Lane and Claire Reynolds, great songwriters and artists in their own right. And I had a couple of stalkers in Australia that just kept...
Is that what it was about?
And then, oh, God. And, you know, and we just...
Let me ask you about your stalkers.
But, you know, it's. I think that's the essence of songwriting for me, is being able to take a situation and still have someone find their own meaning in it.
A lot of the stuff on the record, when we talk about these issues, how much of them, when you're talking about infatuation or situations that actually happened in your life, how much do you bring that to stage when you perform it? How much do you go back to an emotional time where this song was written? And how much does that embody you? Or how much does it sort of, songwriting is different than your actual emotional life?
I feel like performance live, I have all the emotion from every song I've written just waiting to be tapped into, you know, like as soon as I get up on that stage, it's all there ready to really like harness and throw into my live set. So it's not really attached to any one song, and music helps with that as well. Obviously with my rock and roll material, I'm really able to just like let loose. And then with the slower, more quieter songs, for some it's very easy for me to tap into the emotion of the heartache or the let's go crazy, you know.
Right. Yeah. One thing about your career and what I love about it is you're an award-winning musician who's won a ton of stuff in Australia. I think it was a strong run of 5 years of winning an award for best country. When you come to Nashville 2016, does that come with you, or do you have to start new as someone who has a track record and you have great music and you've been able to have a tremendous career? But in the eyes of American songwriters and other musicians who are also competing to try and get whatever they need to get out of the town of Nashville,
yeah,
do you feel like you're equipped, or are you coming in?
You're starting again.
You are.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was one of the biggest adjustments, actually, moving to Nashville, because I had a bit of a sink or swim moment, you know, and I was surrounded by incredible talent and live music every night of the week that was just world class. And you either do sink or swim, you know, and I just allowed it to inspire me and tried to be very real about it and, you know, immerse myself in the community, and it worked.
Well, Nashville's a great example of a place, especially when it comes to country music or roots music, that there's an industry that supports it, meaning there's, you know, the whole idea there is musicians live here and we're going to support the music. Did you feel that coming from Australia, from the lives that you lived before, the five different lives that you've lived, that you've had support to be a musician?
Yeah, I think that's the most charming thing to me about Nashville when I first got to Nashville, which was I actually flew into Nashville or America for the first time in 2012, and I fell immediately in love with the city, and I kept going back a couple of times a year and trying to make friends, and, you know, I didn't really want to move over there just cold, you know, knowing anyone.
Right.
And so it'd been years, and I just kept going over, and eventually 2016 I moved over, and I witnessed people living my dream. You know, they were getting in their vans and touring the country. And that was the most charming part of Nashville to me, you know.
Yeah.
Just the being able to make my dreams a reality.
Is that your dream? Your dream to do that? All the success you had in Australia, is your dream to get in a van and tour from town to town in the United States playing your guitar?
Yeah, that's what I live for. I want to be on stage playing to everyone, of course.
I love it. Ruby Boots in studio tonight. She's got a new album out called Don't Talk About It. She was just signed to Chicago's Bloodshot Record. Just came through town playing this weekend. It's a great collection, getting great reviews. Your second album, Don't Talk About It. All right, we'll take a quick break here. We'll get an update on tonight's news. And when we come back, we'll get a live performance in studio, Valentine's Day edition, with Ruby Boots. Stay with us. Welcome back to Download Here, 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. In studio with me, Ruby Boots, singer-songwriter, roots, Americana, country, rock and roll. It's all of it. The new album is out. It's called Don't Talk About It on Chicago's Bloodshot Records. Ruby lives in Nashville now, but she grew up, or at least spent most of her life in Australia, part of it out on the sea, so I don't know if that counts as Australia. I hear this a lot from novelists who will say, well, you got to live your life before you write it. Is it the same for musicians?
I agree with that, absolutely. I feel that the songs that I'm writing later in life have more substance than, even though I had started living a kind of crazy life at such a young age, even the songs I was writing in my late 20s have changed dramatically to what I'm writing now. I mean, I'm more aware of my inner self, but which has allowed me to be more of aware of what's going on around me, you know?
And I wonder, with your experiences changing, to go from the life that you lived in Australia and other places, but to now be in Nashville, do you notice a change in your life, your lifestyle, like just from the difference of just geography? Do you notice your life changing?
Yeah, routine's an interesting thing because you can kind of get into a routine anywhere and still feel the same. But, I mean, dramatically changing, I live in a different country, so I kind of have to... Sometimes I have to pinch myself and remind myself of that because you do kind of get used to, you know, like your environment, and especially being as transient as I have been over the years. But I feel like, you know, it's an exciting time. I feel like I'm busier with music, which is, you know.
That's the whole point, right?
Always the premise of something.
Well, all right. Before we hear a song and let you go, you know, it is Valentine's Day. This album is about heartache, but it's got heart. It really does. That's the fun part about the relationship of the songs. How do you approach putting your personal life in your music for people to take away, to interpret, to have them affect their lives? How do you approach putting your love life out in front of people?
I guess I haven't really had much trouble. I'm trying to avoid the question at all costs by stalling. Can you tell?
Not at all. You're great at it.
Up until now, I'm like,
it's the charming accent. We're all like, we're glued.
I lie and I tell people it's not about my own life and then, you know, just feel like cover it up that way.
Yeah. Right.
But no, I guess it's, you know, there's an element of kind of understanding that if I've been through something, someone else has surely been through it. I think once you kind of come to grips with that, you can write within the parameters of your own life as well as kind of move outwards into, you know, maybe a little bit of alt facts, I guess.
Right. Yeah, that's a good way to put it. That's good. Ruby Boots in studio tonight. Her new album is called Don't Talk About It. She's on Chicago's Bloodshot Records. Great record label here. All right. What are we going to hear? What's the song we're going to hear here?
Well, you've inspired me to play Infatuation
Infatuation live in studio. Ruby Boots here on 720 WGN. Take it away.
I've been there, sick as a dog with love that burns right through the night. Oh, we've got those that keep us warm until the real thing comes along. You confuse me for a heart that might be waiting. I didn't leave you hanging by a thread in everything I said. I'm saying no. Infatuation will never do you good. True love don't come from just one night. And no, I never said it would. Sure, we like the same old bands, and yeah, we tried that two-step dance. Oh, you had it all worked out in your mind. You weren't leaving me behind. Three kids, a diamond ring, me dressed in white. I didn't leave you hanging by a thread in everything I said. I'm saying no. Infatuation will never do you good. True love don't come from just one night. And no, I never said it would. How many ways can I say it? I tried to cut you loose, but delusion's got you playing with fire. It's only been a minute, I barely even met you, but you say that I'm the love of your life. I didn't leave you hanging by a thread in everything I said. I'm saying no. Infatuation will never do you good. True love don't come from just one night. And no, I didn't leave you. Infatuation will never do you good. True love don't come from just one night. And no, I never said you would. Infatuation.
Right, Ruby Boots, Infatuation, here on The Download. The record's called Don't Talk About It, some Bloodshot. Ruby, a pleasure to meet you, and thanks for playing live tonight. I really appreciate it. Happy Valentine's Day.
Happy Valentine's Day. Thank you.
It's Download here, 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Check that story out at 10 o'clock. That'll complicate things. And that story, especially for the national debate over guns and who should have them and otherwise. We'll continue to keep tabs on that story. Coming up to 10 o'clock hour, Kevin Powell joins us. He is out at the ranch, where the White Sox are beginning spring training. Pitchers and catchers report today. Yesterday, Yu Darvish reported to Cubs camp, so both teams, pitchers and catchers report, which really means all the teamers are there. Position players come early now. They're all there. There's maybe a couple of the prima donnas show up on the actual 19th, you know, the big timers, the vets,
think that's when Sammy Sosa used to roll in.
Yeah, right. Who's the Sammy Sosa of now? It's got to be some of the old timers, right? The Cubs, I mean, that would be someone who's 25.
Yeah, right. I was going to say John Lackey, but no, he's right. Old. Gone.
He's gone. John Lester, I guess, would fill the most, but I saw he's down there, so he's there. So
I saw Rizzo yesterday saying that he's tossing out the rumor that perhaps maybe Jake Arrieta will re-sign with the Cubs as a, you know, a Dexter Fowler type.
Ooh, wow.
I think it was all bogus, but yeah. I don't think it can happen.
Well, I mean, there's no room for him, but I don't know what the Cubs' salary cap situation is, especially signing Yu Darvish, who was the number one free agent for as much as they signed him for. But they did get him for less than what he was asking, but I don't know what the... That would be great, though, to imagine that. Now you're talking return to the World Series, Darvish, Arrieta, which is funny because they could have gotten Darvish last year at the trading deadline and added to this, to that exact idea, right? Arrieta would have been there. I don't think they would have been able to keep him, but... And then the question I have for Kev when it comes to the White Sox is, who's their ace? Carlos Rodon, I guess, would be the ace for this season, but he's hurt. He got hurt. He blew out his shoulder, what, somewhere towards the end of last year. So he's on rehab. And so then you got two youngsters who pitched well in August, Ronaldo Lopez and Lucas Giolito. And then James Shield, who I think it was a year ago when he came from, when he was traded here, I think the year before last, where he had a streak going where he was giving up 10 runs a game. That was the weirdest thing. Where you're like, wow, how does one do that? And he was doing it, but he's still on the squad. I saw him. But Michael Kopech is the big, he's a big star down at spring training because he throws 105 miles per hour or whatever. But I don't think he's going to be in the lineup come opening day for the Sox. So,
what about Britt Burns?
Yeah, here we go. What about...
I have to update my White Sox references move closer to the...
They had... They had a knuckleball pitcher.
Wilbur Wood?
Yeah, but I'm talking
Huff?
Charlie Huff. Huff was on the White Sox.
Yeah, I can go pretty deep in my White Sox.
You know your knuckleball guys. But I'm trying to think of the... And this is where our White Sox fans have to come out, but who was the starting... Who was the rotation of the 83 Sox? You had Hoyt, Dotson... And then it kind of trails off for me. I feel like
Hoyt Bannister.
I feel Bannister was there, yeah. Yeah. And, you know, it's funny, when I read Tim Raines' book, Tim Raines wrote a lot about his time in Montreal, and a lot of those Expos were 83 Sox.
Really?
Yeah. Like, at the same time, that was like, he was in 81 with the Expos, and a lot of trades were going on. Anyway, talk about the White Sox coming up here at 10 o'clock. 10:30, Molly Green's going to join us. Molly did this for us for the Summer Olympics. She did it for the Cubs when the Cubs were making a move for the World Series. We have done this segment where Molly watches the big sporting event so we don't have to. Not because we don't want to, but we just can't. We're on the air. And so I thought the Winter Olympics, that would be great, because when I am home, when the Blackhawks are playing and I'm watching, I am glued to the television. And I'm trying to get my family into it. And they do not want to be it. They do not. And I know I'm part of the problem, because in Olympics, it's a lot about the moment, right? They're about to make that jump, and I nailed it, right? That's the idea, that it's in real time. So here comes the Adam Rippon, and he's about to do his flip, and his triple quad. Here comes a triple. That's a double, like that kind of stuff. And he's about to jump up, and I look at both of my family members who are on the couch, and a little phone,
heads
and iPad,
down.
Heads down, and I'm like, hey, guys, look. He's coming! Oh! And they're just sick of it. They're sick of me being a dictator to... I had asked, actually said at one point, I said the speed. I'm not happy, but I said, okay, guys, electronics down for the Olympics. It was like skiing, downhill skiing. Now, here, what you're gonna see here is how fast he goes down the hill. See that? And it was, I turned it on right when one, I think it was a German skier, wiped out.
Yeah.
He wiped out bad, like into the netting. That's what you want to see. That's the fear.
Wide world of sports.
That's the wide world of sports. And I'm like, oh, this has got to grab him in, right? I mean, look again. Here's the replay. Look how hard that is. Nothing.
Nothing?
I know. Well,
at least you're together.
Yeah, you would think. Are we? Well, really, are we? I don't know. I was kind of annoyed by it. But then I realized that I was pushing so hard that I think it was maybe last night after, because we did the Cochrane stuff. Cochrane and Andrea were on till 8:30 and
so
got home at 9.
A little bit of the
so
last
it was right when
bits,
when yeah. my son was going to bed. But I'm like, did you watch the Olympics tonight? And there was just like this uncomfortable pause of, no, I didn't get you. And I'm like, all right. I don't know how this became my thing. It's the country's thing.
Right, USA.
Yeah, it's a country's thing. It's not just me. So anyway. I'm happy. I'm happy I have someone to talk to about it. Like, I have a lot of questions. Why the Canadian figure skater can fall down on his jumps and be number one, and my guy, Adam Rippon's doing God's work on the ice,
uh-huh.
and he's in third.
And off, some would say.
Yeah. And the other thing I want to talk to Molly about, the snowboarders, the Sean White guys from yesterday and the day before.
Uh-huh.
Oh, my God, they're little small guys.
Yeah, that Red Girard is like 5'2".
They're 5'4". Here he is. This is Jake McGelsnick. He is from Germany. He is 5'4", 110.
Yeah.
Like, the guy, I'm like, that must be the type to be able to be a snowboarder. You have to weigh nothing.
Yeah. I mean, I guess the Red Girard kid's only like 17.
Still.
Yeah. I mean, it's like the high school wrestlers, you know, the senior mm-hmm. that would do the 103.
Yeah. I guess there's a weigh-in in snowboarding. I'm not paying attention. I don't know. I mean, they were under, every one of them was under 100. Even the guy was like 6'2". There's one guy that was like really tall, and he was like 140. And I'm like, what's going on here?
I guess you can't really get the elevation.
You have to be a little guy. I'm just a little guy.
Do like a bloop. Yeah. Just go bloop.
I did not know that there was a type for snowboarding. I just thought skateboard douche. That's what I thought. Sean White fits that category, doesn't he? He fits that. Where you're like, oh, that guy. Great. I didn't know that you had to be a body type, too. All right, coming up, we've got this. So Kevin Powell coming up at 10 o'clock. Molly's coming up as well. We also have, Rokan was giving this away, too, a pair of tickets to Ed Sheeran. It's 2018 North American Stadium Tour at Soldier Field on the 4th. We've got tickets to give away. We're going to do that in the 10 o'clock hour as well. My favorite Ed Sheeran song? Either the one where he's singing about his old buddies. It's like kind of a ballad. Because like, when I was 6 years old. And then one of them's living on his own and one's divorced. I don't know the name of the song. And then the other one I like is the one where he met the girl in the hotel. That's all I know. That's all the Ed Sheeran info and knowledge I have. But feel like I kind of know as much as everybody else.
I think there's a great deal of enthusiasm from these guys. I mean, you've heard about it since the end of last season. Guys have talked about how they can't wait for this season to start, and their eagerness to just pick up right where they left off.
Let's go, 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 White Sox! Chicago's proud of you!
Yes, the White Sox, of course, the new partner here at WGN Radio. We're the flagship radio broadcasting partner. We're all White Sox starting on February 23rd. Kevin Powell is out in Arizona. Spring training as the White Sox welcome pitchers and catchers today. The Cubs as well. Kevin, good to talk to you. I hope you're enjoying the weather out there.
Not so much. Pretty rainy, pretty cool today. So not what you'd expect from the desert. But I think sunshine is on the way. So yeah, I'm surviving in the 60-degree weather.
I was going to say, I'm boo-hoo.
Yes, I'm doing just
here.
Fine covering baseball in 60-degree weather. I'm surviving somehow.
Well, Kevin, I mean, there's a lot to talk about. Right, we just heard that clip right here, Rick Hahn. This is the general manager of the White Sox. This is a very optimistic camp. This is one that you've heard from them all day, talking about how this is one of the bigger ones they've seen in a while. This is something they're excited about. Not really a team that we think is going to compete in 2018, but obviously they're feeling something.
Yeah, I don't think White Sox fans have experienced this ever. Really, right? Because it's always a team that's kind of in the middle, and you know they strike lightning once in a while. Of course, in 2005, and they're kind of patching a team together. And they said, you know what? Forget this. We're going all in on the rebuild. It started 14 months ago when they traded Chris Sale to Boston. They returned Yoan Moncada, Michael Kopech. There's a ton of excitement, but Rick Hahn did kind of temper the optimism a little bit. He wants to see individual growth, but. You know, he did say that this is a rebuild. This is a rebuild as much as everybody's excited and as much as the players are enthusiastic about it. But there's no reason not to be excited about this season. You know, this is chapter one of this White Sox saga, this White Sox potentially a championship team, which I think when you look at the haul that Han's been able to bring in, again, over the past 14 months, it's pretty incredible. I mean, considering the stock of talent they have, they are the envy of Major League Baseball in that regard. So it's chapter one. Don't be the guy who's on the bandwagon in 2 years when they actually are competing for a World Series. This is going to be a really fun year where you can kind of start to see the pieces fall in place. And we even saw a little bit of it last year with guys like Giolito and Moncada. And you're just going to continue to see guys get called up from the minors as they force the issue and force Han's hand. And they're going to have to say, you know what? This guy's too good to be in the minors. Let's bring him up.
Well, we saw it a little bit on the north side where the plans for rebuilding accelerated, where the team in the first year with Chris Bryant and of course what they did in 2015, they got further than what they anticipated. If the White Sox are in a similar position where they're competitive with the pieces they have, is there any way that they may say the rebuild is here, it's time to bring some of these players up, it's time to go get some be buyers instead of sellers at the trade?
See, I mean, that's why I wanted to bring up Hans saying that. I think he's really trying to be patient with this whole rebuild. I mean, of course, unless something crazy happens and they have, you know, a runaway lead with the division, which I don't really anticipate, although it's, you know, Cleveland and Minnesota are probably the two favorites in the AL Central. But, you know, I think that this is just another step up the ladder to where they want to be. So, you know, again, I mean, that doesn't mean they're not an interesting team, by far from it. I mean, in some ways, they're almost more of a storyline. I don't know if I'd go that far, but they have just as much intrigue to me. And I'm not even saying this because of the Sox factor as the Cubs, because this is what spring training is all about, is getting your first look at some young prospects. We basically know what the Cubs are at this point. And bias aside, I mean, and being serious, there's a ton of interest in the White Sox right now. But I think this year you're probably going to see more of a focus on individual growth rather than collective wins. And, you know, I think that does kind of present some challenges, but he understands where it is in manager Rick Renteria, where we talked to him today, and he said, look, I got to wear two hats. I've got to understand the overall picture here, but I do have to focus on the individual growth of players. So, you know, if you're winning, that's a good thing. That means your young guys are probably playing well, considering most of the team is young or a prospect or a guy that's probably going to have a more significant impact somewhere down the road.
Well, I am, you know, it's fun reading the comments about the White Sox coming to WGN, and they say, now all the hosts are going to act like they're White Sox fans.
Yeah, but I
am a White Sox fan, and I will. I know that there's a couple spots in this roster, and I want to ask you about that. I'm going to ask you a couple questions. We're going to get deep in the weeds here. Okay, who's the ace on the squad? Who's pitching on opening day?
Well, I think it'll be James Shields, but he's not. It's funny you brought that up, because I was thinking about that before I talked to you. Who is the ace? I would say that the ace will be James Shields because of his pedigree, which hasn't been great the past 2 years. But I think you're probably going to see them try to line it up where one of the young guys, whether it's Giolito or Reynaldo Lopez or even Fulmer, get the home opener start, you know, to give the fans that. So in terms of opening day in Kansas City, it'll probably be Shields because he is a veteran. And
Rodon's, you know, hurt, right.
And Rodon's hurt, you know, although he did throw today, which was a good sign. He actually finished up his 2 week throwing plan. He had arthroscopic surgery back in September on his throwing shoulder. They still believe in him. They still think he can be the ace of this rotation, and he does have the stuff, but he's just been kind of slowed down from injury. So I think James Shields, I guess, is your ace.
Okay.
But right now, Giolito is, to me, like, more really the ace of the rotation because of you know, the future and what he means to that staff moving forward. But I think you'll see Shields in Kansas City taking the ball.
There was a big sell-off at the trade deadline last year where we saw some players leave. This year, they haven't really been replaced. And we talk about the outfield for the White Sox. You got Avi Garcia in right field. Mm-hmm. Left field, I guess they're going to go with Delmonico there. And who is going to play center field?
Yeah, center's a good one. I think left Delmonico's probably earned that right now to start in left from what he did last year. I'm not convinced yet he's the long-term solution at that position, considering the amount of talent they have in the outfield and the farm system and Elo Jimenez and Luis Robert and things like that. So I think it'll be Delmonico in left. In center field, that's a whole different ball game. I mean, I think I had a one-on-one with Charlie Tilson, who's a new Trier kid. Mm-hmm. He grew up in Wilmette. Was drafted by the Cardinals in 2011. The Sox traded for him a couple of years ago, and ever since the Sox traded for him, he's been hurt. Whether it was a stress fracture in his foot, a hamstring injury, but he's healthy right now. So he's got a legitimate shot to win that. Adam Engel is the guy who made incredible grab after incredible grab in center field. He had a great year defensively at the plate. The art of hitting eludes the man. He's not a great hitter. We'll see if he can make any strides there. Maybe Leury Garcia could maybe put up a fight for it. So the center field wide open. Of all the positions, I would say that's the one that's probably most open for competition.
And
this spring.
One thing I read just the other week was about third base. Third base is an issue where Matt Davidson played a really great first half of last season in the DH and third base when he spelled Frazier, and there were a lot of big hopes. And he had a really tough second half. It seems like pitchers figured him out. Strikeout rate was atrocious. Where are we with that? Did he lose that position? Did he lose it being the heir apparent at the hot corner?
Yeah, I think what's always been his trouble is on base percentage and batting for average and things like that. But he's got a ton of power. I think what you're going to see at left field is a rotation of Tyler Saladino, Yolmer Sanchez, and Matt Davidson, which is fine for now because basically that gives you an opportunity. I think they know what they have in Tyler Saladino. I think he's 30 now, so he's a good player. But I think in Yolmer Sanchez, there's a lot of White Sox fans are interested in him. I don't know if he's long term projects as a third baseman, but maybe he's a utility guy. Yeah. So there's definitely some interest in getting him reps. But I think because they're going to play Moncada at second as every day if they can. Same with Tim Anderson at shortstop. That's set. But then you have Saladino, Davidson, and Sanchez. I think you're going to see a rotation of all three of those at third and DH. So, two of those three will likely be playing. There could be some substitutions late in games and things like that. Davidson could even get a couple reps at first, although he didn't play all that well defensively there last year. But those three guys will probably split time between DH, third base, and even a pinch of first.
The next question is just about some of those prospects. I mean, you mentioned Kopech, of course, who everyone's looking at as sort of the Steven Strasburg of the White Sox rotation. Then you've got, Jimenez, as you mentioned, and Robert. Talk about those guys. Are we going to see any of these guys actually on the field in 2018?
I don't think Robert. He's only 19, 20 at the most. Still very raw. I think you're definitely going to see Eloy Jimenez. He's a 21-year-old outfielder. He was the guy brought over in the Jose Quintana trade with the Cubs, which is looking better and better by the day for both teams. I mean, you look at the Cubs, the big reason they were able to get Darvish is because of Quintana and his contract, most importantly. So huge haul for the White Sox in that deal. I think there's a good shot you see Jimenez. I think there's a good shot you see Kopech. I think with Kopech, they're going to be really careful because he's a power thrower. You can't always worry about guys like that with their arms. You're throwing 98, 100 every pitch. What can that do? How strenuous is that on the body? Although watching him today, that dude is just super intense all the time. They're like in stretches, and he just looks intense. So, that could be a blessing and a curse, I guess, in some way. So my point is with him, I think he threw like 130 innings last year, which was by far the most he's ever pitched in a year. So I think they're going to be really, really careful with his arm and his durability and his health and things like that. So I think you will see him later in the year. And same goes for Eloy. I wouldn't be surprised if you see a little bit more of Jimenez maybe post-July than you do Kopech. But I think those two guys you'll probably see at the major league level at some point.
Yeah. All right, my last question is just about they obviously retooled their bullpen, which was disastrous towards the end. I mean, they shipped everybody at the end of the year. But, when you think about the guys they brought in, and even James Shield to an extent, I mean, how much are they hoping to do exactly what they did last year, where they're able to get some of these veteran players to play into the summer doing well enough for they can restock the minor league system?
Yeah, in a dream scenario, James Shields somehow has a really good first half. I don't think that's going to happen, but somehow, let's say he does do that, and the Sox can move him for whatever. Most importantly, moving his contract. I think he'll do $20 million next year.
Yeah,
$22 million this year for Shields. Jeez. So I almost think it's next to impossible to trade him, but if White Sox want to cross their fingers, they can go for that. I think I liked a couple moves, bringing in Soria, who's closed a ton of games in his career. He hasn't been a full-time closer in the past 2-3 years, but you know, and the thing with the bullpen is you don't really care about hanging on to these guys. You can essentially rebuild a bullpen in an off season if you really wanted to. So, but bullpen arms are very valuable at the trade deadline, because if a team's in contention and they're having bullpen troubles, or if they have injuries, they might reach a little bit and give a little bit more. I mean, look what the Sox got with that trade with the Yankees when they shipped Canely and Robertson over to the Yankees. They got Blake Rutherford. So,
You
know, I think with Soria, you're probably going to see him. That was my first question I asked him today, was do you want to close? Are you expecting that? And he kind of said whatever they want, but he said, yeah, I'd be happy to close. I mean, most guys in the bullpen want to be closers. That's a high-profile position. If Soria can turn into a closer and put together, you know, a nice little stretch in the first few months, yeah, he could have some value. And Nate Jones, who had massive nerve restructuring on his pitching elbow, he was back. He's been back, and he's pitching. He says he's pain-free. Nate Jones is a hell of a pitcher, and if he's healthy, he absolutely has value out of the bullpen.
Yeah,
I mean, he's been with the team for a while, but he's probably a guy that's not going to project for the long-term future of the team. But he's a guy that could potentially have a lot of value. And even Hector Santiago, who was the minor, they signed him today. It was one minor roster move for the Sox today. He pitched for the Sox in 2011 and 13, one-time All-Star, can kind of be a swingman between a bullpen guy and maybe even a few spot starts. So he might even have some. That's a low-risk, potentially high-reward signing there.
What's your plan this week? Do you go back and forth from both camps?
Yeah, well, to your point, I don't think we're going to be completely biased here that we have the White Sox. I have a job to do. I will continue to cover both teams in town. So I will be at, I was at Cubs for the Yu Darvish circus, which is going to be interesting. But Joe Maddon rolling out some of his new theme this year, which is incorporating art into his game plan, essentially. So I know you're rolling your eyes.
I love it.
Yeah.
The guy who hosts the download loves it.
I love Joe Maddon. So anyways, I will be at Sox camp tomorrow, and then probably Friday, and then I'll probably split between Cubs and Sox over the weekend. So.
All right, great. Well, we'd love to catch up. We can talk about the Cubs and what they got going on with their camp coming up too. Kevin Powell, of course, you can hear him on the WGN with the Rokan Show every afternoon, and he is covering both the Cubs and the Sox down in Arizona. Thanks, bud.
All right, thanks, Justin. Talk to you guys soon.
Speaking of the WGN Morning News, Violetta and I are going to be on tomorrow morning. I think it's 6:30 a.m. Turning it around. They've been doing all week the Radio Olympics, where people from the WGN TV Morning News TV staff do indoor Olympic ad hoc events, mostly just, you know, potato sack races and stuff like that against radio stations. I saw the guys from XRT were on.
Mm-hmm.
And WGN is tomorrow, so it's going to be me and Violetta.
Right. Do you know the events?
I don't.
Oh,
I'm not even sure what the dress code is. Like, do I get penalized by showing up in athletic gear? Do I go cool? Like, do I wear like a
suit?
Yeah, do I suit it up and be like, I don't know what we're doing here. You know, like, what do I do? If I had more time, I was asked to do this afternoon, I would have sequenced out a skating outfit, like a full on, like I was on the German skating, and I'd be like, I'm sorry, I misinterpreted what we were doing here. Like, I would have made a bit out of it, but I don't have that kind of clothing. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Some sort of snowboard, like snow pants.
Oh, that would work.
And a snow jacket. You have like a wintry.
Yeah, I could. But I was thinking, like, hey, if I could just get spandex, you know? Hmm. But spandex is summer more than winter. Like, I'd really need to do it up. I would do, like, flowing, like, pants.
There's a figure skater on right now who's just wearing, like, a goofy yellow tie. It looks like it's like a Bozo the Clown tie. Mm.
Okay, there you go. I guess I guess I could do that. Well, that's tomorrow, 6:30.
Yeah.
All right, you know what? Let's give away a pair of tickets to Ed Sheeran. How about that? His 2018 North American Stadium Tour at Soldier Field on October 4th. 10th caller right now gets tickets starting. You can get tickets starting this Friday, February 16th at 10 a.m. Ticketmaster.com. You want Ed Sheeran tickets right now? I'll give you a pair. 312-981-7200. 10th caller gets them. Ed Sheeran, Shape of You. Hurts my lips. Yes, that's right. It's Winter Olympics time here on the Download 720 WGN. You know, one of the big issues, I was saying this throughout the show, that I'm very into the Winter Olympics this year. This is something that every year I enjoy the Winter Olympics. My family is not. So I have no one to talk to about it. And when we have show nights, I never actually get a chance to see what happens. And it's somehow sometimes hard to tell what the results were because you weren't there. But that's why we have Molly Green. Molly Green, of course, did this for the Summer Olympics. She did it for the Cubs a couple years back, where she watches. So we don't have to, even though we want to. We're at work. Molly, so tonight was a big night in the Winter Olympics, and you've got a lot of notes, I've been told.
Yep, and I'm really into it.
All right, good. So am I.
Yeah, so as Mike Tirico said, we've got a lot to get to tonight. That's as exciting as he gets.
Well, what were the events tonight? What were the big events in primetime?
So the women's giant slalom, so this is the debut of Michaela Schifrin. Mm. So we saw the first run, and then at 11:30 tonight, so if you hurry and get home, you can watch her the second run and see if she wins the gold. She's in the spot two right now.
Is that a live event? Is that taped? Do we know if she won or not?
Yeah, it's live.
Oh, it's live. Okay.
Yeah, it's live. So it's I don't know. It's around 1 o'clock in the afternoon there right now,
okay.
Right?
Okay.
They're 15 hours ahead. So we get to see a lot of live events, which I've enjoyed.
Yeah.
This time.
Yeah, I was worried. I was worried because I thought it was going to be a lot of, you know, during the daytime they tell me who wins the gold and then I just kind of have to watch it at night like they did summer, but
yeah.
or maybe it was in Sochi. But it's actually been pretty clean and pretty smooth for them. I've been getting alerts and what have you right after it happens. So that's good.
Yeah. I know. Yeah, I've enjoyed that. I've had to the past few times like hide from the news and you guys can't do that obviously. So
right.
You can't avoid it. So we had that and during that, so Bodie Miller is doing the commentary, and there's a lot of like these skier dudes that are in their late 30s who this is like their first year being out of the Olympics, and they're working for NBC, and it's usually fun to hear them, but Bodie Miller is like, I don't know, he's not fun. He's very serious. He's very deadpan. And I want him to be, you know, there was really these stories about him living in his car or like a shack in the woods and just skiing all the time. Like, I want some of that. But this is, he's just like a businessman or something.
The,
it's very straightforward.
I think it's Johnny Mosley did the slot, like the bumpy skiing.
Yeah, he's
earlier.
Great.
And he sounds like the turtle from Finding Nemo. He's a little bit like, oh, far out. That's rad, bro. Like, that's how he talks.
Which, that's what I like.
Yeah, that's what you want out of a ski play-by-play, right? All
and
right.
Bodie Miller kind of looks like Chris Pratt, so I sort of want him to act like that, too. And he made a joke about how being married is hard when you're on the World Cup circuit. And then later on, he had to retract that and apologize for it.
Oh, gosh.
So we had that happen tonight.
That's always good. Like, take a moment to retract my statement.
I was making a joke. I'm sure. Yeah.
There you go.
Okay.
All right. So you got that. So we can catch Michaela Schifrin.
Right.
She's one of the big faces for the Olympics. She's going for gold a little bit later tonight. What else is on tonight?
So there were we checked in with some speed skating. The Americans are not good at speed skating. It's all about the Dutch. So this was one of our best chances for the women to win, and they came in, Sarah, down 4th, 8th, and 28th. The girl who came in 4th is married to a Dutch skater. That was the closest that we got to it.
I love
that. Yeah, that was just a few minutes. We
tips.
Also briefly checked in with Men's Skeleton, and we got to hear
that?
From what Lee Diffy at the Sliding Center.
Okay,
so Lee Diffy.
What is it?
It's this guy named Lee Diffy, and he's very enthusiastic, and he works at the Sliding Center. Lee Diffy at the Sliding Center.
What is Skeleton? What is that?
That's a good question. It's something kind of like Luge. They sort of explained it, and I feel like every year they have to explain it. So it's it's one person sliding down the tube.
So it's advanced Luge, right?
And the guy, the American, is from Wisconsin, and his fans were wearing cheese heads there in South Korea.
There you go. Brought it through customs, got it all the way through. I'd love to be a fly on the wall in that customs South Korean airport where they're like, what is this? Oh, it's a cheese head. It's we come from the land of cheese, and we put it on our head. It's a custom in the Midwest. all right, and then of course tonight the big stuff was figure skating, right?
Yeah, but right before that we saw men's downhill with my favorite Olympian, Bryce Bennett. If you don't know, do you know who this guy is?
I don't know who this is. No,
he's the tallest Olympian. He's 6'7". He has a great mustache. He chases bears through the woods.
A little setup piece for him, like there where he's chasing bears?
Oh no, this is research on my own.
All right, so what did he do well?
He's in 16th place. So tonight was all about the old people. Everyone was in their late 30s that won tonight. So he got beat by Axel Lund Svendal, who's one of the attacking Vikings, the Norwegian downhill skiers. And he's 35, so he's the oldest person to ever win a gold medal in downhill.
The Swedes and the Norwegians, they win the downhill skiing most of the time, right?
The Austrians.
Austrians,
and Norwegians.
Right. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, close. Yeah. So my heart is still racing from the figure skating.
Oh, before we get to the figure skating, I remember yesterday or the day before I was trying to get my son to watch, and one of the things that I thought would grab his attention, because he didn't care about the big wipeout. There was a wipeout where I think the German skier went, you know, head first into the, as he was going downhill. But then the Australian was, I think, or not the Austrian, who I think probably won, they interviewed him right away off his trial. And he had an Austrian accent. And I was like, oh, you got to check this out. This is going to be great. You know, and he did the Austrian accent and it was perfect. You know, like just, I don't know what it is.
Exactly what you want.
Yeah, exactly what I wanted. Still didn't care. And I was like, you never get an Austrian accent on American television. Like, this is what the Olympics are all about, Austrian accents. Anyway. All right, so figure skating.
Was he speaking English?
Yeah, he was speaking English.
But it
was so good. Yeah. It was, like, perfect, right out of central casting. And I was like, oh, this is great. No interest.
Yeah.
So,
all right. How are we going to get him interested in it? What's it going to be?
I don't know. I thought maybe it would – I don't think anything's going to do it. I mean – the figure skating has been the most intriguing, mostly because
snowboarding.
Yeah, I thought snowboarding was going to be it. No interest. I think you're competing with the iPad and it's not working. So I'm trying, but like I said, I'm running. Go ahead.
Last night I watched the dog show, Olympics, and Bachelor Winter Games all in one night. So that was my competition, and I got it all done.
I have a feeling he's going to get older, and he'll be in 8 years, he'll be 18, and be like, well, you know what? He'll be really into it, and be like, well, my dad really got me into this. So right now it's not working, but in 8 years it'll pay.
You're laying the groundwork.
Yes, exactly. All right, so the figure skating tonight, big event. This was the couples, right?
Yeah. Right, the pairs. So it was... the Chinese have been very, really dominant, and they were leading when they went into it tonight. So, Alonia Savchenko, this is her fifth Olympics. She's she's Ukrainian, but she skates for Germany. She's 34, and her partner made a big mistake last night in the short. So they were coming in 5 points behind, and they were amazing. They were so good. It was like holding your breath.
Wow.
Good.
I love that.
And they won.
They did? They won the whole thing?
Yeah. They won the whole thing.
What happened to the Canadian, the one woman who looked like she was like Mary Lou Retton?
So she's
Muscular.
Yeah, I'm into her in that she's vegan and she's saving dogs from South Korean farms. So they've put a ban on, because they eat dog in South Korea, they've put a ban on this within 40 miles of the of Pyeongchang, but they've been like sneaking it in, and so a lot of groups are going and trying to save dogs, and so she's so far she's adopted two dogs from South
in
Korea.
In South Korea, like in the Olympic Village, she's just bringing dogs into the dorms?
Well, this seems to happen every Olympics. I don't think she's living in the dorms.
Oh, I thought that's what the idea was. They all live in dorms or something like that.
Well, she's older, too. Everything's really spread out. Yeah, I'm not exactly sure the logistics of it, but yeah, she's awesome. They came in third. Yeah.
What did the Americans do, the married couple?
They didn't even show the Americans.
They
did? It was like a film that's not screened for critics. It's the Americans.
This is the married couple, right? They didn't even make it to the top 10 or whatever?
They were, you know, I don't even know what position it was, but they only showed the top six.
They
said that they had a disappointing skate last night, a disappointing skate tonight, but we're all supposed to be like happy that they just made it there.
NBC was banking on that Valentine's Day special. Married couple up there. And I watched one of their, I think it was during the team skate, and they did it, and I think he fell down a little bit. And that was the one point that I felt like I engaged with the family, because we're like, I wonder if she's really mad at him. Like, you know, like you wonder if, like, when you're doing the pair skate, if one of them goofs up, especially when it's not like a flip, like they're just skating and they trip, and they get points taken off. I wonder if they just start subtly and secretly judgmental.
That's what happened last night.
It did?
With the team that won, he made a mistake, a big mistake, and she was just like glaring at, you know, like, I don't think they talked until tonight, they were saying, and
come on. Yeah. All right, so who had the best costumes? Like, who was the best costumes of the figure skating tonight?
Well, the French totally dominate that. The French pair, they are like, they were talking about them last night, that they're the cool team.
Oh, yeah.
And tonight she had on kind of like, she was wearing pants, and it sort of had like, it was very strappy. And his short program costume, I don't know if you saw that, looked like he had a blue band-aid across the front of it. But they're cool. And so if 4 years ago they started to let them use lyrics in music and the songs that they chose. So that's their thing too, is picking songs. Now, it's not really, I feel like it's kind of lame what they choose, but their long program has 5 million hits on YouTube, and it's because of the song. So for their short program, they use an Ed Sheeran song.
Yeah, we just gave away tickets, right?
Yeah, and then for their long program, or the free skates, they use, I would not know this unless they told me, a Disturbed, which is a Chicago band, cover of Sound of Silence by Paul Simon.
Just how Disturbed thought it would be used, right? When Disturbed was like, oh, yeah, we're going to do this cover. And they're like, you know what would be great? I mean, a perfect scenario is if the foreign, like the French pairs, like did figure skating to this. And they're like, oh, we can dream. Let's take it from the top again.
So the contrast of that is, I wrote down what Johnny Weir said. So the Russian team comes out in the, like after the Chinese have skated, the Germans have skated, it's so thrilling. They come out in yellow and black polka dots. He has like, it looks like a clown tie on. It's ridiculous. And Johnny, and they skated to like a Christina Aguilera song, that Candyman song, which is kind of like sort of big band swingish.
Okay.
And Johnny Weir said, they are a little bit too square to be giving us this Candyman realness.
Johnny Weir is, Lipinski too. They're both stealing the show out there. They should just have 5 extra events for figure skating just so we can hear more of them. All right, Molly, that was great. Great update. I hope you can do that again for us maybe on Friday when we're back. We don't have a show tomorrow.
All right.
Whatever, just because this is, I feel like I was there with you. I feel like we watched it. Molly Green watching the Winter Olympics tonight so we don't have to, although we want to. Thanks, Molly. All right, that's going to do it tonight. Patty Vasquez coming up next. Also, I want to let you know that you can join the live audience for the Download Happy Hour. We're doing a new show with me, Justin Kaufman, at WeWork Kinsey. It's next Wednesday, February 21st from 5 to 6:30, sponsored by Lender, Chicago's small business leader. We'll feature special guests. I'm excited about this. We've got a great lineup I'm going to reveal maybe on Friday. Those are great people we're putting together. Yuri Lane will be there, the human beatboxer, and also Cook County Commissioner Bridget Gaynor as well. We also have a Q&A session with me and some of the guests after the taping. It's a happy hour, so we'll be serving drinks and appetizers. All attendees must RSVP. Go to WGNradio.com/events or WGN Radio's Facebook events page. WeWork provides small businesses, startups, freelancers, and large enterprises with stuff. I don't know where the second part of that went. But it's okay. I will say this, though. I kind of feel like Bill Maher right now at the end of a show. That's all we have. Join me at we're going to be in Mississippi at the Riverboat Casino. No, but this is going to be a fun show, you guys. We work Kinsey, a new thing. We're doing happy hours, 5 to 6:30. If you work downtown in a loop and you want to come over, it's free drinks, free appetizers, free food. You just got to RSVP beforehand, WGNradio.com/events or WGN Radio's Facebook's events page.